All right. Today is March 12th. March 12th, and we are continuing in our, I think the class I see in the What's Happening is called All in the Family, but we're talking about relationships. Now the relationships are sibling relationships, the one between Moshe and Aharon. Let me tell you at the outset, I'm so sorry, but next week, well, I'm not so too sorry, but next week this class does it. There is a shiur at this time, but it's a special class for Pesach. We're having a dialogue with five rabbis on the Haggadah.
Right,
so bring your questions, okay, so that's next Monday evening at 8 p.m. So it's at this slot, but so please come. Come and we'll have food, okay? And but we have a different topic for the night.
Which rabbi like?
We have Rabbi Blanchard, Rabbi Marmerstein, Rabbi Robinson, and Rabbi Griscott from
Joe Robinson?
Joe Robinson. Yes.
Here? Is
it going to
be here?
It'll be here.
You don't want to do one?
I may need it afterwards, but right now we have this. Okay, so let's follow, please. Okay. So, what we have starting the fourth Aliyah. Is Moshe's discussion with his brother Aharon in the wake of the passing of Aharon's two sons. Okay. All right, so I'm together Dvar Torah. I see I wrote here, I used to have weekly Dvar Torah on the website. This is from 2011. And it discusses the difference between the roles Moshe and Aharon played for the people. We've discussed this. We've discussed the roles played by Moshe, Aharon, and Miriam. Remember we did this Torah, Vodug, Milus Chasadim, the Anan, the Man, the water that followed them, the bear that followed them. Okay, Moshe represents Emes. Moshe Emes v'Saraso Emes. Moshe's truth. Moshe is the religious leader. Aharon is the spiritual leader. Don't confuse the two. A religious leader may also be a spiritual leader, right? But they are two different goals. Okay, one has to do with what we do. Religion has to do with what we do, our actions. Keeping kosher is a religious thing to do. Hopefully it'll end up being a spiritual thing as well. But first and foremost, it must be a religious thing. First thing I must do is make sure I don't eat the pork. I don't mix the milk and meat. How that makes me feel, how that makes me a better person, I have to learn that. A three-year-old can understand that you can't buy Lucky Charms because it's not kosher. A three-year-old can understand you can't have ice cream. You had a hamburger a half hour ago. And this is a very crucial thing. This is ideology. This is doctrine. Every three-year-old is taught the doctrine that his or her parents care to teach him. Yes.
I read this Pashabat that if you have a child, let's say until they're 9 or 10 years old, you can feed them halav ve'basar, and you don't have to wait, and maybe you shouldn't because the chinuch, like, you don't want to be too stringent about it.
Okay, you can find a book that says anything in it. It's probably not a good idea to let a child at 9 years old eat milk and meat together. Because it gets habitual. It's probably okay to let a 3 or 4 year old do that.
Yeah.
But many people say, listen, kashrut is a spiritual thing. It's not just a physical thing. But you're right. You're right on one level, is that until a child turns 12 for bas mitzvah, 13 for bar mitzvah, everything that child does is just in preparation for the day they turn 12 and 13. Now, it depends on the thing. For instance, no one says it's a good idea to have a 9-year-old fast on Yom Kippur, right? Because that, the child will grow into. The custom is to fast the year before the Bar Mas Mitzvah. But milk and meat, I think, look, everyone has to go there, you know, understand their own way. So it's certainly a worthwhile discussion on that level. But as far as Moshe and Aharon are concerned, Moshe's role is the lawgiver. Aharon's role is the man with the pomp and the ceremony. He's wearing the holy garbs. He's wearing the the what's called the tzitz across his forehead that clears up anything that's wrong in the temple magically. He's wearing the 12 gems across his breastplate where he communicates with God. So if you're going to say who's the most important religious functionary in Israel, everyone will say the high priest, right? He's the high priest.
Mm-hmm.
No. There's someone who teaches him. That's Moshe. Right? Now, Moshe was actually our first high priest. Mm-hmm. Our first Kohen Gadol. He served as Kohen Gadol for 1 week. And then he gives over the reins to his brother. Right? So Moshe is the one you call when you want to know what's the halacha. Aaron is the one who's supposed to make the people feel spiritual. Now, which one is more important? Which one is the means? Which one is the ends? Right? Do we act in a religious manner so that we can become spiritual? Right? Or do we hope to be spiritual so that I can be religious? Now, I don't think either of those are 100% correct. That would be hopefully we'll accomplish. Is to have both together, but make no mistake, to skip the religious norms and feel that I will just become spiritual on my own with my autonomy, how I feel, which biblical character tried to do that and saw a very ignominious end? Moshe came down very hard on him. I'm talking about
Korach,
correct. Korach wants an egalitarian approach to finding my own spirituality. He was by all means a spiritual person. It's especially meaningful now as we're discussing Nadav and Avihu because they died the same death as Nadav and Avihu through an unsanctioned Torah. Moshe warned them, you know what you're getting into. The text doesn't have to tell you, but Moshe told them according to the Medrash, guys, remember what happened to Nadav and Avihu. You're asking for the same thing. Are you sure you're ready for this? Korach saw a great entry to take over as the leader because Moshe had just decreed that they would spend the next 40 years in the desert. Korach says, this is my chance. I've been waiting for this for a long time. You want to wait here and die in the desert and serve that guy? Or you want to come with me right now into Israel? Now you're going to say, but Rabbi, there's nothing in the text that says that Korach says it. That's how the Torah works. Korach uses the mantra of call Yisrael kulam kedoshim, we're all holy. Who put Aaron in charge? Moshe. It's nepotism. They're serving each other, right? So Korach, look. Has anybody here ever read the writings of the Arizal? Are there any Arizal readers here?
A little bit.
Yeah. Okay. So if you go to Kalbach, you probably read a little Arizal. The Arizal says that the first Kohen Gadol when Mashiach comes.
It's Korach.
Which is, of course, absurd because Korach is not even a Kohen. He's a Levi.
Right.
I might as well be the Kohen Gadol, right? I mean, how could Korach be the Kohen Gadol? Don't you see now why? What is he trying to say?
He's the fake one?
Well, he's not like a decoy. No. It's just that Korach would be an excellent person to fulfill the role of what the Kohen Gadol is supposed to do, which is to enhance our spiritual awareness. He wanted to do that. And it was a common sense rebellion, what Rav Soloveitchik called the common sense rebellion. Here, you want me to have blue fringes in my tzitzit? Why? Look at this tie. This tie is beautiful tchelis. This is mamish tchelis, right? This color is the color that I'm looking at it. I'm getting whatever you wanted from tchelis. And Moshe says, no. I can't tell you why the answer is no, Korach, because it's just that God told me it's a fringe. If once everyone starts to decide on their own, to make their own egalitarian view of what their tchelis is, mark my words, within three generations, no one's using tchelis anymore at all. Not in the fringe, not in the tie, not in the hanging.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But even this blue might have significance, I think, in Kabbalah, because it says the blue is like healing.
It's beautiful. It's fine, but, and you know what? You can wear blue from your head to toe, but just make sure you have the fringe, because if you don't have the fringe, then it's if it's not a uniform, then it's just not going to perpetuate. And Moshe says, I know how that works. Anyone who just wants spirituality, listen. The Hare Krishna singing in Central Park in the 60s and 70s were also very spiritual people. They're still there now.
Something square, Mark.
Yeah. So they knew how to be spiritual. Okay? So that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about a combination between Moshe and Aharon. But when you have to be careful. If all you are is just a religious element, you have to be careful with that too, because religion that doesn't turn to spirituality is going to become dried out to the point where it may not become, first of all, it may not become appealing to others, and it doesn't have the feeling to it. It itself may not be perpetuated. So Hashem gives us both Moshe and Aharon. Get it? And Moshe at the burning bush seems to express that he needs that. Mm-hmm. He doesn't feel that he's up to the task himself. Who Moshe? Aharon? Who Aharon? Moshe? Just when they go out, you're right. Okay, they're both needed. So what would you say in your entire year of Jewish observance is the most spiritual? Not maybe. Everyone has their own spiritual event. Maybe it's the Seder, maybe it's Kol Nidre. But what would you think that most Jews would answer? When are you getting like so ready for this? I've been waiting for it.
The Seder or Sukkot, I would say. Yom Kippur.
Okay, I'm waiting for a particular answer that not one of you said yet. The shofar.
The shofar. Oh, here
right
the
before. I'm not talking Chodesh Elul. Chodesh Elul, okay. And I think that's why we break one day, because it's just. I can't just go straight into Rosh. I have to have a break. And now, as we're preparing for that first shofar blowing,
right, yeah.
And you say Lam Natzeach seven times.
Total nonverbal.
Everything is. Do you feel it? Okay, but that's certainly up there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's a very spiritual moment, right? So, what is it? A religious moment?
No, so, I mean,
of course, it's fulfilling a mitzvah.
Fulfilling
a mitzvah. That's why the Rambam says, even though blowing shofar is a gzeiras hakosuv, right? So he's trying to tell us, why are we blowing shofar? Because God said so, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then he says, avol yesh remez, but there is a hint to why we're blowing shofar. So to him, the Sadia Gaon very famously says there are 10 reasons to blow shofar, right? Don't you understand? The more you know a reason for something, the more spiritual you can feel about it, right? Okay. So the Rambam just says that the shofar is a wake up call. Wake up, right? Rouse yourself from your slumber. All right. So, okay. Thank you. What am I waking up to? Right. Wake up and see that. Are you the best you can be? That's all. Simple as that. All right? So, it's amazing, not this year, because that's not a problem this year, but when Rosh Hashanah falls on a Shabbos, the most aesthetic, that's what the Rav Yus called it, the aesthetic mitzvah, the aesthetic mitzvahs, the mitzvahs that make you feel spiritual, right? One of the most aesthetic mitzvahs of the year is pushed aside because appears as almost an absurd mathematical reason. Someone may walk 4 amos in a Rishus HaRabim. He may walk 6 feet carrying something. Oh, come on. 95% of the Jews in the world today live in a city that has
Eruv.
Meaning that most Jews don't really worry about the law of not carrying on Shabbos, right? Unless you don't hold from the Erev, of course. But we live with our Erev in, right? So even if that person does walk out, and I've never met a Baal Tokeah in all my years. I mean, we usually have the same one here. They leave the shofar in shul before Rosh Hashanah. They're not carrying it to shul.
Right.
Adarabba. I mean, you know, they'll if it's not Shabbos, of course, they'll carry it to a hospital bed to blow for someone. But even when it's Yom Tov and they're allowed to carry, they don't. It's sitting here in shul, right? It's so amazing. The whole world goes without blowing shofar, right? To protect that one witless dolt who's going to carry it in the one, two cities in the whole world where Jews live without an Erev.
So what you are saying is that... religion
is above spiritual.
Yes, I am saying that. Mm-hmm. Yes, because the religious, the actions shape character. Your religious actions, your, what you do, has to shape how you feel, not vice versa. Because if it's how you feel shaping what you do, it's chaos. So
you feel like that, and I.
You are Korach.
Uh huh.
All right, and Moshe comes down harder on Korach than anything else in the Torah. And I know, and I just finished teaching Korach in high school, and I got to tell you, the students ask a very tough question. All right, I understand Korach, his men, but you know, there's no other sin like this in the whole desert. Their families, the children, 250 families. It says the earth swallowed up. So take the men. I said, you know, I don't understand that. Not everything God does, he doesn't always call on me to ask my opinion on it, right? Neither did Moshe. And I'm just thinking that it's meant to show us, Ledoros, how dangerous Korach's revolt could have been. Okay? It's okay. I see some questions here. I need to start. That's the first.
Yeah.
So,
how do you feel different between what Karaites preach and what Korach preach? Can you just,
like,
what is your opinion?
Karaites do that. Their creed.
Yes.
Igor's question is a group of they're not so numerous anymore. But in the Middle Ages, they were more numerous than the non-Karaites, and they there are different opinions of their origins. But they seem to be spiritually descended from the Sadducees, who seem to be spiritually descended from the Shomronim and the people who wrote the Dead Sea Scrolls. These are Jews who have only a Torah, a written Torah tradition, but no oral tradition. But the reason why Igor's question is so germane to the Karaites is because their creed is Chapisu be'oraisa shapir, which is Aramaic, and then it goes to Hebrew. Ve'al tishanu al da'ati. Whatever you need to know to act as a Jew, you have the autonomy to just read this book and behave as you wish. Okay? I stand by what I just said.
Total
the Karaites, were in the Middle Ages, had the favor of the Muslims, because the Karaites made the Jewish calendar to be more like the Muslim calendar and changed Judaism to be more... Now, this is a rabbi talking, so maybe I'm colored, but that's the history that I'm aware. And they had the favor of the caliphs, and they were more numerous and more powerful than the Jews who held from oral traditions.
Wow.
They have not survived. They're not here. I hate to be so ham-fisted on this, but where the Karaites have gone over all these years is a testament to what happens to Jews who let go of oral traditions. Now, it's gone over many,
what
many hundreds of years. So the Crimea, my father, remember Israel has now Samaritans. By the way, the Reform movement is now considered. Karaites are much more religious than the Reform movement. They hold from the sanctity of this book.
The
Reform movement says this was written 1,000 years after. They're in some areas, they're very much more stringent than we are. Yeah. All right, look, we're not prophets today, so I wouldn't come down as hard on Karaites. It's just that, you know, that they mean well. They want to follow the Torah of Moses, but they. But they also they may understand Korach's revolt differently than I do, you know. But they also want autonomy in the interpretation of Torah. Yeah.
So Korach caused others to sin, which is a terrible thing. Was that so bad that he couldn't do teshuva, make a sin offering, and cause others to sin?
It could be that Moshe offered him such a chance. But you're right about this. Look in chapter 4 of Hilchos Teshuva of the Rambam. And he tells you that the very worst thing that anyone can do, he lists 24 things that the really egregious sins, and then a number of different sins that sort of block us from the tshuva process. And the worst one is that causing others to. Now, can we judge Korach b'kafshus and say that he had good intentions? Well, you know, this is why Rashi discusses so many different opinions about what his intentions were.
Hmm.
You know, but one thing is clear: he behaved with machlokas. At the end of the story, it says,
that this happened, the earth swallowed him up, so that everyone should watch and not to be like Korach and his community. They should not be like Korach. And the Smag, Sefer Mitzvahs Gedolos, Rav Moshe of Kutzi, he counts this as one of the 613 mitzvahs. That it's prohibited to be contentious. If we become a Baal Machlokes, right? We are violating the mitzvah at the end of the Korach story that says, do not be like Korach. Amazing, yes.
I was going to say, perhaps we could draw a parallel when it comes to rebellion with the rebellious son, and though that's a theoretical concept. But you know, the rebellious son, when he's like bar mitzvah and like 3 months,
you see,
like, I say that maybe there's a parallel, like, so between Korach and the
could be. The rebellious son, however, the Gemara darshans itself out of existence, and at the end of the story says there was never such a thing. It's just to tell you parents' advice about how to prevent from such a son behaving this way. Okay, but I'll get back to this. Now, there's a very important point of the end of the Korach story. Who fixes the story? Because remember, at the end, the people start dying, and they're all... And the incense, that the strange fire of the incense is doing to all those people what it did to
Aaron.
Not Moshe. Aaron. Aaron goes out and brings the good Ktoris.
Yes.
And Aaron walks amongst them and revives everybody. And people stop dying, not because Moshe walks out there, but because Aaron does. The rebellion was a rebellion against spirituality. Mm-hmm. Or to define spirituality the way I want, it has to be the spiritual one who will fix it and atone for it. So I say all of this because I want you to feel where we are right now. It's the Torah reading in a few weeks from now. We just finished reading 5 weeks of detail about the Mishkan. 5 times we were told about it. Really, look, verses are mentioned 5 times. The menorah 5 times, the mizbeach 5 times, the shulchan 5 times. Genug, right? So, all right, we're finished. It's Rosh Chodesh Nisan. There's a lot going on this day. Oh my goodness, look at Rashi, all around the Torah. Parshas Paraduma was said on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. All of the Mishkan was completed in Rosh Chodesh. There's 7 things that the Chazal say all happened on that one day. It's a very busy day, and the Vayi Bayom HaShmini, there's a dispute whether that's the 8th of Nisan or the 1st of Nisan. It doesn't matter so much for us. Let's say it's the 8th of Nisan. They're celebrating for 7 days. Moshe is going through a lot of profound pomp and the great ceremony, and every single day they're acting out various elements of what's going to happen when the tabernacle is completed. And on the 8th day, they finally offer their first sacrifice on the altar, and a fire comes down and sweeps up everything from the altar. Everybody's flat on the floor. This is all from last week. And then, while everybody, including Moshe and Aaron, are flat on the floor, out come Nadav and Avihu, a strange fire. That's what we did last week. The 12 things they did wrong, the 6 Ben Adam L'Chavero, the 6 Ben Adam L'Makom, the 6 between other people, various elements of our inner circle, the 6 Klape, ritualistic Averos, like they didn't wash their hands, didn't wash their feet, they were drunk, right? They weren't wearing the proper clothing. So here is what happens. Obviously, this is a great shock to Aaron, right? Moshe tells him he says this only happens to the people who get closest to God, right?
What happened to him?
Okay. And then Rashi says that Moshe was telling his brother, this I thought was going to happen to me or you. Right, but instead it happened to them, because they must be greater than we are. A father would, that consoles a father, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but Aaron knows very well that, listen, I'm in a very important position now. I don't want to fashter the day nor the whole sanctuary. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. So let's see what happens. Let's go to. Let's start Pasuk Yud Bet. This is after the boys have died. Their bodies have been dragged out by their cousins. Not by their 2 surviving brothers, by the way. Remember we said, I think 2 weeks ago, that these 2 brothers, all 4 of them, had a din of Kohen Gadol.
Right.
Because they were Mishuchim. What made anybody a Kohen after this?
The birth.
The father's a Kohen. Right. But the first group of Kohanim.
Except for Pinchas.
Right, except only Pinchas, because he was already over here. And he didn't. He wasn't Meshua.
And Pinchas also.
But we just said it because he wasn't Meshua, but those four boys were. So otherwise, they could have dragged their brother's bodies out. Their brother can go to Nivatame to a brother.
Paradum.
Right?
They had
Paradum. Yeah, Paraduma was already that. That's the Paraduma was taught that day, or 8 days before, according to another opinion. All right. So, Vayidaber Moshe al Aharon ve'el Elazar ve'el Itamar, banav hanosarim. You see the top of the page, verse 12. So Moshe spoke to Aaron, the father, and the two surviving brothers, Elazar and Itamar, the remaining sons. So, let's set aside right now what he's telling them to do. But obviously what's happening here is... Can you use excuse me for injecting this, like a Hollywood term? You ever hear? The show must go on. Uh-huh. Right?
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah.
So this is in contrast to the Haftorah of this day, right? Because in Haftorah where, remember, Uzzah pushes up, pushes back.
Right, and David stops the procession.
David stops it. Forget it. The show does not go on there. He sends the Aron to another place, and forget it. Go home. Finished.
But the difference there is it was David's, his choice to bring the Aron, whereas here, this is Hashem
David is
commanding.
Letting everybody know in that area, my fault, my bad, I ruined it, not him. We have to go home. You know, I'm not sure if I'm even right in connecting them, but I've always felt from the outset that Nebuchadnezzar, I mean, you hear this even today, that when those Israeli athletes were killed at the Olympics, the Olympics should be shut down. That's a show that should not have gone on. That's all right, I'm here. I am an Israeli, Israeli constituent telling that. The rest of the world was saying, "No, the show must go on. What are you talking about? Moshe made the show go continue. So should we? We'll be honoring them." No, that's different. That was murder, and you let it happen, and it was not. We didn't have the proper security in it, right? So, but I want to make sure everyone understands the difference between why the show has to go on here with Moshe and but it doesn't go on with David. Okay, so he tells him, take this, do this, you have to continue with the activities. All right? And he tells them that part of the activities, because there is a sin offering here, remember it's Rosh Chodesh, there's a sin offering every Rosh Chodesh, right? Plus there's a sin offering for the beginning of this initiation for the Chanukah Samizbeach. And what's the rule, the first rule of the sin offering? The sin is atoned when the Kohanim eat the meat of whatever was brought. Mm-hmm. Okay?
And Aaron didn't want to do it.
So he says, Va'achaltam, look at Yud Gimel, 13, Va'achaltam osa b'makom kadosh. You have to eat it. I'm giving you the instructions. All right? He tells him exactly how to get it, what to eat. He tells him what part of the animal to eat. Okay? Pretty simple, pretty pashut, right? Okay. Moshe's not acting in any way. He's telling what the halacha is. This is what God told me to tell you. This is what you have to do. Okay. Pasuk Tes Zion 16 says, Ve'eis seir achatos, darosh darash Moshe, v'hinei sarof. Moshe checked out and he saw that it got burnt. It wasn't eaten. But an amazing thing. You see those two words, darosh, darash?
Mm-hmm. It's like insisting, inquiring.
No, but you see that little asterisk and the note at the side, chatzi ha-torah betevos?
Yeah.
Darash mikah v'darash mikah. Mm-hmm. If you take the word, this word darosh and that word darash, mm-hmm. right? And go this way, word by word, back to Bereishis. And that word, that back ahead to the end of the Torah, you will, if you just count one word, two words, three words, four, right? Go back to back, like a duel. Right?
Yeah.
You'll get to the first and the last word of the Torah at the same time.
In other words, this is the middle
two middle words of the Torah.
Really?
The two middle words of the Torah are Dorosh Darash.
Oh my God.
Same words.
One has someplace with a long rule, no?
No, that's the middle letter of the Torah.
And this is
that's in Vayikra, Vav, right?
Not the Nun, but the Vav.
And this is
it's in Shmini. This is halfway with the words of the
number
Torah.
Number of words.
halfway of the words of the Torah. Perek Ches Pasuk Ches before this is halfway with the Psukim of the Torah. Got it? That Vav is coming right after this, by the
what's,
way.
What's the middle Pasuk? What you, what is
middle
that?
Pasuk is Vayikra Ches Ches. The middle word is this.
Chet,
the middle
tet,
letter.
8-9, Vayikra 8-9.
8-8.
Oh.
The middle word is right here.
Oh my gosh.
The middle letter, as Chava just pointed out, is coming up soon, the Vav of the word Gachon in the sixth Aliyah. Right, but you see the page right after this.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. It's 266. I don't have it here, but it's 268. Okay. So it just shows that the books of Bereishis and Shmos are quite a bit bigger than the books of Vayikra and Devarim. We're pretty close to the beginning of Vayikra for all these middles, you see? Getting you see the point?
Yeah.
Maybe because Bereishis and Shmos are much bigger than Vayikra and Bamidbar. All right, so Moshe sees that it's burnt, it's not being eaten. Vayiktsof al Elazar v'al Itamar. Notice something missing in this pasuk? It says Moshe is angry. Mm-hmm. Rashi is the first to point out. Rashi's so amazing. Because Moshe is usually a protected personality, no? But Rashi points out every time Moshe gets angry in the Torah.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, what mistake did he make as a result of getting angry? Every time he gets angry, Rashi writes, and this is the mistake he made because he got angry. He's obviously trying to teach us something. That's what I'm saying is missing. It says he should be angry with Aaron. Aaron surely is the one, after Nadav and Avihu on their own did something for which they suffered considerably, you think his two remaining sons are going to decide on their own not to eat the meat? He should be angry with Aaron. Aaron is the one who told them what to do, I'm sure.
Right.
So, well, there's certainly also money.
Could be angry at Nadav and Avihu.
Well, it just says, "Sofa lazar v'timar ben Aaron hanosarim," the remaining ones. No, but he doesn't want to. Who is more shocked at this loss, a sibling or a father? Father is dumb, right?
Father.
He tells him, "Madu lo achaltem es hachatos b'mkom hakodesh? Why aren't you eating the chatos in a holy place? We will not. The whole country, the whole nation doesn't have atonement because of you. Why aren't you doing this? Ki kodesh kodeshim hi va'osod nasan lochem laseses avon ha'ida. You have to lechaper. You have to bear the iniquity of the congregation. You have to atone for them lifnei Hashem, and you didn't do it." Mm-hmm. I mean, it's good kizok. He's angry for a good reason,
mm-hmm.
Right? Okay. Hein lo huva astamoy al hakodesh pnima. Moshe is saying something very technical here. There's a pshat and there's a drash to it. There are two types of chatos, right? Maybe I can draw a picture for you. Right? Okay. Let's say, okay, here is the outer altar, mm-hmm. Right? There's a ramp going up to the altar over here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Big ramp. Okay, you have a picture of it, right? Here is where the Beis HaMikdash is, known as the temple.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? You enter here, and there are three areas of the temple. There's a small auditorium in the beginning. Then you have the Heichal here, mm-hmm. The menorah, the shulchan with the breads, and the inner mizbeach for the incense. And in the back is the Kodesh Kedoshim that is only entered once a year on Yom Kippur.
Mm-hmm.
Right? In this middle room, the main offering in that middle room is incense.
Mm-hmm.
Very rarely is the blood of a sacrifice brought into that room. Only on Yom Kippur, the three holidays, right? It's very rare. And very, very unusually rare sacrifices. It's not, doesn't happen often. I'm just saying is that the blood of the blood of those animals are taken into the holy temple, that animal is not eaten.
Mm-hmm.
It's only the animals that are slaughtered on this mizbeach. There are four corners here, right? Right. This he goes around and he puts the blood in the four corners. The shechitas are done here in the north. Okay. Anyway, so Moshe is telling them,
You see, then now you read the words. Hein lo huva estam moel hakodesh pnima. These chatuses were not from those that whose blood are taken into the there, and it was called the Ohel Moed. Mm-hmm. But we call the Beis Hamikdash in the desert was called the Ohel Moed, right? Mm-hmm. That blood was not taken into the Kodesh Pnima. You're supposed to eat this meat. Achol tochlu osab kodesh kasher tzivesi. You have to eat the meat the way I was commanded, right? Now, it's a very interesting thing. Just when Moshe told Aaron to prepare for this great celebration of 7 days, mm-hmm. right? So Moshe tells Aaron, you have to seclude yourself for 7 days before that. Ki chein tzuvesi, so have I been commanded. Mm-hmm. Now, if you ever learn the beginning of Maseches Yuma, Yuma starts off with how the Kohen Gadol has to seclude himself 7 days before Yom Kippur, mm-hmm. so that he guards his tumah, because you can become a 7-day tumah, and if that happens 3 days before Yom Kippur, we're in trouble. Mm-hmm. So he secludes himself for 7 days. And the Gemara asks, how do we learn this? So we learn it from Aaron. Aaron is the Kohen Gadol. He had to seclude himself for 7 days before this great event, right? So Moshe says, "You kichein tzuvesi," because Moshe, so have I been commanded. But you see, what Moshe is telling Aaron is not, I have been commanded to tell you that God doesn't trust that you can maintain your sanctity for these 7 days. No. Look in Parashas Mishpatim. God also told that to Moshe. Mm-hmm. That Moshe had to seclude himself for 7 days before going up to Mount Sinai. Mm-hmm. You see the parallel here, and Ramban points this out. Huh. And you know what? So does Ibn Ezra, so does Rishpam. This Ohel Moed, this sanctuary, is meant to perpetuate Har Sinai. It's a perpetual Mount Sinai. You're taking Mount Sinai into a small little place where you can have communion with me the way that Moshe did. Right? And Moshe is saying, Ki chen tzuvesi, you get it? He's saying it in pu'al. You have any grammarians, Hebrew grammarians here?
Yeah.
Ki chen tzuvesi. Have I been commanded. That's the pasuk at the end of Parshas Tzav. Ki chen tzuvesi means, so have I been commanded. Not have I been commanded to tell you. Yeah. No. I was commanded to do the same, so don't feel bad about this seclusion necessity, right? Okay.
Oh.
He's not allowed to have any contact with anyone.
So that's not his wife, made explicit.
No, it's a drash. That's the way you could best way to teach is to serve by example.
Okay. But
you can't even see his wife. You can't be near people because what happens if the Kohen Gadol 4 days before Yom Kippur is standing next to someone and the person collapses and falls on him and he dies? Forget it. He's tummy for 7 days. So he can't be near anybody for 7 days. So Moshe says, Aaron, don't feel bad about this. I know it's, you know, you... And Aaron says, it's just Yom Kippur, but the rest of the year, okay, you don't have to have this standard. Okay. So here he says, so Moshe says, why aren't you eating the meat? Ka'asher tzivesi. Here it's not tzuvesi. Tzivesi means, I commanded you, Aaron. You know this. We spent 7 days going over these laws. How are you missing this? Look at Aaron's response. Pasuk Yutes, everyone have it? Vayidaber Aaron el Moshe. Hein hayom hikrivu eschatosam ve'es olasam lifnei Hashem. I know, they offered the chatos and the ola, the sin offering, the burnt offering, before God. V'tikrena osi ko'ele. And look what happened to me today. I just lost 2 boys. V'chalti chatos hayom, hayitav be'inei Hashem. And if I would eat meat on such a day, meat gives you joy, right? If I would eat meat on such a day, hayitav be'inei Hashem. You think God would like such a thing? We'll get the atonement will come. So this is a very important point in Jewish history. Because Moshe is at a crucial moment. Moshe is... second guest, his brother. I mean, his brother didn't eat the meat, and Moshe's angry about it. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. So Rashi says it was his anger that made him lose his sense of what the halacha was. Mm-hmm. But his anger didn't make him lose his sense of humanity. Mm-hmm. Right? It doesn't say, and Moshe said, Aaron, wait here, I'm going to ask God. There are 4 places in the Torah where Moshe does that, right?
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't say, Aaron, you know what? okay, what you say makes sense. Let me find out from God whether you're right or not. He doesn't say that.
And it says also, Vayitav Be'enav.
It says, Vayishma Moshe Vayitav Be'enav. Maybe Vayitav Be'enav is in the eyes of God. Mm-hmm. That God looks down at these two brothers and say, that's what I've been waiting for, two brothers to behave like this. Right? Oh. Moshe could have pulled rank and said, you know, Aaron, you little twerp, you. Mm-hmm. Right? Excuse me. Aaron's older than Moshe by 3 years. But how dare you fly in the and question my authority on such an important day? Right? You hear it?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
You're questioning my authority. Don't you realize what this means to the people? So it's only a leader who is more sure of himself, or at least is sure of truth. I thought that this was truth. You know what? I can bend too. And this is so important. It's so crucial. My daughter reminds me always of a in fifth grade, the teacher asked, who was the last shofet? The teacher entered the answer, Shimshon. My daughter raised her hand and said, Shmuel. So the teacher said, you're wrong. She just said, you're wrong. So my daughter, I probably should have left it at that, but she said, you know, I used to ask my kids trivia questions at the table. That question used to come up pretty often. And she said, my father always said that Shmuel was the last shofet. So the teacher said, your father is also wrong.
Oh.
No, which is perfectly fine. She maybe didn't know her father. But the two things about that. One, I was writing the curriculum for the Bible in her school at the time. She probably didn't know. So the curriculum she's using as my name on the cover. And it's curriculum for Sefer Shoftim. This is what you should teach in Shoftim. But Yoser Mizu, there was a big poster on the wall. You ever see those Torah Mesorah posters? Used to have them in your classrooms with all the names of the parashios. And the class was learning Sefer Shoftim. And there was a big poster on the wall of the Shoftim. Right? And Shmuel is the last one on the Shoftim. Eli and Shmuel are the last two even though they're not in Sefer Shoftim. So the answer to the question, who was the last shofet, is right there on the wall. What I'm trying to say is that someone like Rav Soloveitchik in a class can say, that's a good question. You're right, I don't know. Rav Schechter does that all the time. Right? Okay. So in all my years with, there are 2 years with Rav Soloveitchik, I only had the chutzpah to raise my voice to ask a question twice. Twice I actually raised and said this question. So one question was, when he used to veer off of his topic of whatever Gemara we're learning for Rosh Yom Kippur time to learn about Rosh Yom Kippur. So he was talking about that for most people, your decree is set on Rosh Hashanah. Finished. You're set for life. The only way you can have something bad is if you regret the good things you did, and then you have to, you know, fight again for Yom Kippur. But the Rambam says we should all imagine ourselves that we're, you know, right down the middle, right? Okay. So I had the chutzpah and I asked this question, and I said, it's okay. The Rambam says and the Gemara says everyone should picture myself. I should picture that I'm just right down the middle right now. Half righteous, half wicked, and my next act will determine whether I'm 51% righteous or right. Okay, so that's how good. That's how we should all behave. That's fine. Let ourselves behave that way. But why should I say that that's what you are? Which is essentially what we're saying with the greeting Gemar Chasima Tova after Rosh Hashanah. Mm-hmm. So my question is, based on what you just said, Rebbe. Why do we greet other people Gemar Chasima Tova? We should greet, I am sure you already had your Gemar. You know what I'm saying? Gemar Chasima Tova means, may you have a good decree coming up on Yom Kippur. No, that's what everyone should say for themselves. I'm 50-50. But as far as what I think of you, you're better than I am. Right? Everyone should look at others and say, you're not a 50-50. Right?
Yeah. Sephardim don't say that.
Right. So Rav Soloveitchik just said, he said Nidish halavai b'necha b'enoni. So he said, you know, don't put down. You know what? In other words, he's saying, I for myself, I'm 40-60. I'm not even at 50-50 yet. But don't you understand? Someone who's not sure of themselves, like that teacher Nebuch, can't say, you know what? Let me get back to you. Maybe your father's right. Right? It was just silly.
Right.
Right? The more sure of yourself you feel, the more you can say, you know, Aaron, I don't even have to go up to God for this one. You're right. You're right. I'm sorry. I don't know why I got angry with you. Rashi says that getting angry was the first stage in Moshe not figuring it out himself. Mm-hmm. The anger precedes whatever the pasuk says. Mm-hmm. Right? So, and let me tell you something. This is one of the very few laws of what's called aninus in halacha. Aninus is onen is the halachic status nebuch of a person.
Right.
Between the time the close relative passes away until the funeral is called aninus. There's practically, I mean, what are the laws of aninus?
No just, mitzvot, I think.
No meat.
Right, no mitzvot. But the only prohibition meat. Is no meat.
Mm-hmm. No wine also?
And no wine, yeah, because meat and wine always go together on that.
Right.
And there's only one other thing, because it's mentioned in the Torah. No Maaser Sheni. Why? Because in Parshas Kisavo, when the person brings his Lo Achalti Ba'oni. He said, I didn't eat it while I was an Onin. Because he's allowed to eat Truma, he's allowed to eat Bikurim, he's allowed to eat, that's his food. But Maaser Sheni, which you take with you every few years to Jerusalem to eat it there in a state of ritual purity, don't eat that before funeral. Right? It's amazing law, but it's Xeris Akasa because that's what it says in the parasha. Be that as it may, there's a beautiful ending to the story of Vayishma Moshe Vayitav Veinav, and there's a Hasidic way to read this, because throughout much of the Torah until now, it's always Moshe talking. Moshe's always telling everyone else what to do. So Vayishma Moshe, and he goes, you know what? I like listening too. Someone has something to teach me, right? Okay, so that's the beauty of this relationship. It's a beautiful kapara, and I'm sorry to say that again. Next week we have the Haggadah. Please stay tuned for the week after. The week after is the week before Pesach, so we tend to have instead of Tanakh, we have like a Haggadah presentation or something. But we have that next week, so we'll have to figure it out. I mean, we usually have a halacha presentation. And what's going to come next is Moshe and Aaron in Parshas Baloscha, which is where Aaron and Miriam speak about Moshe's wife.
Yes.
So we'll see we touched upon some of that already in the past, but we'll continue with our sibling relationships. Please pass these back, and we'll have Marav in just a few minutes.
You can say about Aaron's kids.